I'd like to call to order the work session, budget work session for Monday, April 8th, 2024. Clerk, can you please read the emergency evacuation plan?
Upon activation of the emergency alarm signal, all persons should immediately exit the building. Please use the exits to the left, right, or front of the council chambers or the east or west stairwells outside of the rear doors of the chambers. Do not use elevators or escalators. At the exit of the building, proceed to the assembly area located in front of the Department of Social Services building at 900 East Marshall Street. Citizens and employees should assist visually and hearing impaired visitors with exiting the building.
Thank you. All right, we are going to get rolling on our presentations today. I apologize for arriving late. We are going to roll through what the administration has to present. After each presentation, we're going to have time for questions. So if you could just write down if you have any questions as they're going through the presentation, and then we'll do them in between each section. Additionally, we're going to take a recess at 2 o'clock. We have to do docket review, so I'll be tied up from about 2 to 2:30, and then we'll reconvene. And then I know some folks want to look at the eclipse. What time is that? What time is that? What? 3:18. Okay, so goals. We will try and wrap up in time for that as well. All right. Any questions before we get started? Great. Okay. Mr. Saunders, are you going to kick things off?
All right. Good afternoon. Great to be with you all today. Lincoln Saunders, Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Richmond. Today, my hope is to be able to walk council through three presentations. The first is on city revenues. The second is an overview of the city's operating budget. And then thirdly, if there's time, cover the proposed changes to class and compensation for city employees in the third presentation. All right. Again, thank you for the opportunity to come before you today to present more detail on the introduced budget that the mayor presented last week. As I mentioned, we'll start with an overview of revenue before operating and compensation. In this year's budget, we are continuing to build for the future by strengthening the city's foundation to improve the quality of life for all citizens. Through prudent financial management and a steadfast commitment to our values, we continue to make progress in a climate of economic uncertainty. In the face of economic uncertainty, we continue to exercise fiscal discipline. We want to ensure that our actions today contribute to the well-being of generations to come. To support our priorities, revenue projections need to be realistic, sustainable, balanced, and to the extent possible, accurate. Wanted to start the conversation around how Richmond compares to other localities and its ability to raise revenue. To answer the question, we can look at Virginia's fiscal stress index. Although I've presented this to council before, we think it's important to continually share the status of where the city is on the statewide fiscal stress index. This index compares localities' abilities to raise revenues, is published annually by the Commission on Local Government, and has a three-year lag. So the latest report published in July of 2023 was for fiscal year 2021. The index illustrates a locality's ability to generate additional local revenues from its current tax base relative to the rest of the Commonwealth. The fiscal stress index classifies Richmond as being more fiscally stressed than our neighboring counties, Chesterfield, Henrico, and Hanover. The latest report for FY21 shows Richmond as being the 22nd most fiscally stressed locality in Virginia. Last year, when I presented this to you, Richmond was the 25th most fiscally stressed. So we've moved closer to the category where we were back in FY2019 when we ranked 23rd. According to the report, as a fiscally stressed city, Richmond is not alone. The average stress value for Virginia cities is significantly greater than for its counties. Of the 38 cities in Virginia, 32 cities, 84%, experience above average or high stress. On the other hand, of the 95 counties in Virginia, 33 are experiencing above average stress, with no county being classified as experiencing high stress. Our neighboring counties, Chesterfield, Henrico, and Hanover, rank in the below average and low categories of fiscal stress. So one of our challenges is that our real estate tax rate is typically compared to that of our neighboring counties, which experience low or below average fiscal stretch and have a higher capability to generate revenue. Another challenge for us is our high level of tax-exempt real estate. As the capital of Virginia, Richmond is the epicenter of state government. We're home to several higher education institutions, and while we benefit from their presence, the real estate property owned by the Commonwealth and the higher education entities are tax exempt. While we receive a payment in lieu of taxes or a pilot, the amount we receive represents a small portion of the taxes that are exempted. This is because only certain buildings qualify for the pilot. For example, state universities and hospitals do not qualify. We can only charge the pilot for certain services, namely police, fire, and trash. And the pilot rate applied to the properties is only a fraction of the real estate tax rate. As a result, this places a greater burden on the cost of funding core services on our taxpaying residents and businesses. Our high level of tax-exempt real estate limits our ability to generate revenue. It contributes to our high degree of fiscal stress. Our neighboring localities are far less burdened by tax-exempt real estate. Because of this, our neighboring counties have a greater capability to generate revenue, and consequently, they have low or below average fiscal stress. All right, now I'd like to turn to the fiscal year 2025 general fund revenue outlook. Similar to last year, we have to consider the broader economic landscape when budgeting for revenues. Last year, as an economic backdrop, it was widely forecast that a recession would occur in calendar year 2023. Although a recession did not materialize, there are reasons for caution as we look to fiscal year 2025. Economic indicators such as job growth, retail sales, and home sales have been slowing. To give us insight into the ever-changing economic environment, we hosted our second annual economic roundtable last December. The roundtable consisted of industry experts and economists. One of the takeaways from the roundtable is that there would be slower economic growth over the next 2 years. The Federal Reserve began to raise interest rates in the spring of 2022 to bring down inflation. It was widely forecasted again then that we would see a recession. With higher interest rates, the economy did not go into a recession in 2023. However, the economy is anticipated to slow moving forward into calendar year 2024 and 25. For the housing market, the primary takeaway is that despite the increase in mortgage rates, there is still a strong demand for homes in the region. The lack of inventory of homes for sale in the region is constraining our housing market activity. In construction, higher interest rates, labor and building costs, and labor shortages will continue to constrain the construction industry. For tourism, the Richmond region has gotten national recognition as a tourism destination. As part of budgeting for revenues, we also monitor economic indicators, and I'm going to briefly review a few of them. As I mentioned before, job growth has been slowing. Both nationally and in the Richmond Metro Statistical Area, the average number of jobs per month has been declining over the last two calendar years. Compared to 2021, when job growth averaged 604,000 jobs per month, the nation averaged 377,000 jobs per month in 2022 and declined further to 251,000 jobs per month in 2023. In the Richmond metro area, the average monthly jobs per month declined to 1,700 jobs in 2022 and 1,000 jobs in 2023, up down from the 2,200 jobs created in 2021. per month. We also are seeing that retail sales growth is slowing. It's decelerated between calendar year 2022 and calendar year 2023 in the nation and in the city of Richmond. Nationally, retail sales grew 9.1% in 2022, but has slowed to 4.8% in 2023. Comparatively, retail sales in the city of Richmond moved from a 16.5% pace of growth in 2022 to a 4.7% growth in 2023. Retail sales growth has been above inflation, and inflation, which peaked in mid-2022, peaked between 7.1 and 9.1%, has come down to between 2.4 and just over 3%. Going in further on the housing market, with mortgage rates being at a relatively high level, home sales have struggled over the last two calendar years. Nationally, existing home sales declined between 18 and 19% in 2022 and 2023, and we've seen a similar trend in the city of Richmond. The total number of single-family homes and condos sold in Richmond declined 13% in 2022 and 20.3% in 2023. However, in the last 3 months, December through February, the total number of single-family homes and condos sold in Richmond did increase year over year. This is a positive sign that our city continues to be a desirable place to live and for people to move to. This slide is going to shows the year-over-year percent change in the median sales price of homes sold for the nation and for the city of Richmond. The top two charts compare the year-over-year percent change for single-family homes, while the bottom two charts compare the year-over-year percent change for condos. The data shows the demand for homes in Richmond is holding up better than the nation. Although the Richmond median sales price growth slowed in 2023 to 1.4 and 10.2% for single-family homes and condos, the increase in Richmond was higher than that in the nation. So while there seems to be consensus among economists on the economic outlook, every forecast, however, comes with risks. Economists have highlighted risks that could lead to a more prolonged economic slowdown. For example, regarding the Federal Reserve policy, we are waiting to see whether the Fed will, in fact, lower interest rates in a timely manner. This is a possibility if we see slower progress in bringing down inflation to the Fed's goal of 2%. Prolonging the higher interest rate environment could dampen further residential and commercial real estate market and consumer spending. The drawdown of pandemic savings and student loan replacement puts a greater constraint on consumer spending than anticipated. This is significant because consumer spending accounts for two-thirds of the economy. Federal spending and elections are another factor. Political discord could destabilize the economy, and geopolitical tensions such as the Middle East or Ukraine could bring back supply chain issues and surge in inflation. As the economy is expected to moderate, so too will the anticipated revenue growth between fiscal years 2024 and fiscal year 2025. The moderating growth we are seeing in our housing market has a significant impact on our real estate assessments. Residential properties and condos account for approximately 60% of our taxable assessed value. As the housing market has slowed, the growth in real estate assessments is also anticipated to slow to 4% in fiscal year 2025. This growth is below the 7.74% growth we budgeted for in 2024, and is closer to the average growth we saw in the 8 years prior to the double-digit increases that occurred in FY 2022 and FY 2023. The good news is that our revenues have recovered from the pandemic. However, we do expect to see more moderate revenue growth in FY 25 than the revenue growth we forecasted in our FY 24 budget. It's important to keep in mind that the revenue growth in 24 reflected rebounding from the pandemic. On the top left of this slide is the real estate tax revenue. Again, we expect to see more moderate growth with 4%. Real estate revenue is estimated to be about $461 million, a growth of 5.1% from the FY24 adopted budget to approximately approximately $438 million. Moving to the right, sales and meals taxes are expected to continue to grow moderately. At the bottom left, consumer utility is anticipated to increase largely due to the electric utility. The increase is to reflect what we are currently collecting. Moving to the right, we expect to maintain personal property and business license tax revenues. Overall, general fund revenues are projected to grow by 5.2%, roughly $49 million in fiscal year 2025, bringing the city's budget just over $1 billion. Real estate tax revenues accounts for 46% of this growth. Another driver in the revenue growth is the admission, lodging, and meals taxes. These are expected to increase by $9.8 million, or 16.2%. Sales and use tax collections are also expected to increase by $4.9 million, or 10%, and we also anticipated improvement in delinquent tax collections to add to our revenues. Our revenue growth also reflects budgeting for the Tourism Improvement District fee this year. As you may recall, the TID fee was approved by Council last year after the FY 2024 budget was developed. Other sources contributing to the growth include interest income, permit fees, solid waste fees, and revenue related to the state salary increase and reimbursement of social services, personnel, and operational expenses. This slide shows the total revenue for the general fund and other funds from fiscal year 2021 through the FY 2025 proposed budget estimates. For FY 25, the proposed revenue for the city's financial plan is comprised of the seven funds, which total $2.9 billion. These funds include the general fund, CAP, special revenue, enterprise, internal service, debt service, and Richmond Public Schools. As mentioned earlier, the general fund is estimated to increase 5.2% in fiscal year 2025. Most of the non-general funds are expected to post increases as well, except for the CIP and Richmond Public Schools. In FY 2024, the CIP posted a healthy increase due primarily to new school construction, while FY 2025 does not have provisions for additional funding for new school construction. However, we have committed to provide $800 million of capital investment for Richmond Public Schools over a 20-year period. The first $200 million was provided in FY 24, and the next $200 million is programmed in the proposed CIP budget for FY 2029. The City of Richmond is also increasing its contribution to the Richmond Public Schools budget by $15.8 million, or 7.1%, in the proposed FY 2025 budget. The most significant revenue changes by source for the FY 2025 general fund is an increase in general property taxes, largely due to real estate taxes. Other key revenue sources contributing to the general fund increase include other local taxes, ALM and sales taxes, revenue from use of money and property, and revenue from the Commonwealth. The decrease in transfers is partly offsets the revenue growth. The top three sources of revenue for the general fund are general property taxes, other local taxes, and intergovernmental revenues. 56% of Richmond General Fund comes from general property taxes, followed by 21% from other local taxes. These include local sales and use tax, meals tax, and business license taxes. The city also receives about 12% of its revenue from other governmental sources. I think we're all generally familiar with the general revenue fund timeline. In January, the real estate values are established and the first half of real estate taxes are due. In March, the business personal property taxes are filed and business license taxes are renewed. In June, the second half of real estate taxes are due and personal property taxes are due as well. And on a monthly basis, the local sales and use taxes, meals, admission, and lodging are due as well. In closing, while this year's revenue budget represents a smaller increase compared to last year, it does support a budget that is fiscally prudent and maintains a structurally sound financial base. Would welcome any questions at this time, Madam President.
Thank you, Vice President Lambert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and apologize for my tardiness. I thought this meeting was happening a little bit later. But thank you, Mr. Saunders, for that informative presentation. Can you just reiterate for the public on the process that we took last year in regards of the rebate that was given to the taxpayers? We have a lot of folks talking about why we can't lower our tax rate. I thought what we did last year was to put us on a different schedule. Can you just explain that schedule in regards to that that initiative we did last year in regards to the assessments? So you know how we started the schedule. Can you just reiterate that for the public, just so everybody's on the same page with what we're working with?
So in
sorry about that.
I believe this ties into
wants some budget information. The eclipse.
So if you recall, a few fiscal years past, we had a significant jump in the actual increase of assessed values between budget adoption and the completion of the assessor's assessment process. So what was proposed and supported by council at the time was that we would use a significant portion of that incremental revenue that was unbudgeted for a rebate for our taxpayers. We did also at that time discuss the need for the city to make a transition in how we in addressing our assessment schedule to our budgeting schedule. Right now we are setting a tax rate separate from when we set it for the budget, you know, later in the calendar year, and that causes both confusion as well as, you know, particularly in years where the assessments come back different than the projection. Last year, we made another significant change in how the city projects revenues. We've hired a city economist and are relying pretty heavily on their input as far as what our projected revenue growth would be, while also verifying it with the assessor, finance department, et cetera, who have a good pulse on what collections and revenues are looking like. The shift in our schedule has not taken place yet. We are working with the assessor to implement his new software and intend to make the switch at a later date in consultation with the assessor and DCAO, Joy Hogg, for a future date for us to make that transition.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to be on the record just so as we're going through this process, folks, because we're getting the questions. So I just want to be transparent. Thank you for that.
Thank you. Just briefly add that the incremental revenue that was unbudgeted in that fiscal year, in the next fiscal year, it was budgeted and was in large part how we were able to fund things like the public safety pay plan, as well as some of the other, the 8% wage increase to keep up with inflation we did for employees last year, so on and so forth.
Thank you. I'll give my time for additional questions later. Thank you.
Councilmember Jordan. Yes, thank you for the presentation. Just a quick clarification. On page 20, the Richmond Public Schools revenue declining 3%, is that the share from the state declining? Okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to confirm. Thank you.
Yes, I think, I believe I shared this with council in an email last week, that if you look at city funding for Richmond Public Schools, we have significantly outpaced inflation, whereas state funding has fallen far short of keeping up with inflation. It averages out to RPS's funding keeping up with inflation, but considering what the city's been able to contribute, it's disappointing that state funding hasn't allowed them to use that to get ahead, so to speak.
Councilmember Robertson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mrs. Saunders. The presentation, page 9, help me understand what contributed to the tremendous increase in assessment values for the year 223 versus a significant drop in 21 the year before. And while we are projecting that drop to reoccur for 2025, what's happening? What's causing those things other than market shifts?
So would remind council that going back to the FY21 budget, that was the budget where we were in the review process when COVID hit. We moved into the shutdown. And I believe, you know, based on the recommendations of the assessor and budget, all incremental revenues in 21 from real estate were zeroed out. And so we adopted a budget with $40 million less revenue in the budget than what had been proposed just days earlier by the mayor on March 6th. So 21, we had essentially, we captured none of the, no incremental value growth. We did see actual value growth in that fiscal year. I would need the team to help me with giving the exact percentage. And so as we headed into fiscal year 22 and 23, we were essentially, I think, catching up from the growth that had occurred in the COVID year of FY21. And just quite frankly, we were also seeing real increases in market prices in the city because so many folks, whether it be because of teleworking or, you know, just the attractiveness of the city of Richmond, we were seeing tremendous pressure on our housing market of people wanting to buy and move into the city. We've seen significant net in-migration from even Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads into the city. And so that has put, that did put a lot of pressure on the increase and led to an increase in valuation for the assessments. And I think now with, you know, again, the economy, with the, what the Fed has done to increase rates, which is meant to slow the economy and reduce, therefore, by reducing inflation, we are seeing that impact in it changing the housing market. I think people are less likely to make that sell and purchase when they're currently have a 3% mortgage rate and they're going to have to jump to an 8% mortgage rate. So that is, I think, having the impact largely that I think the Fed wanted to have of kind of reducing the growth in the economy.
So the chart that we're looking at is true, but not reflective of some of the factors that contribute. This picture shows a tremendous drastic increase, whereas it's actually not just based on that. It's actually based on a lack of counting that value earlier.
I would say so. I mean, I'm going off of memory here, so give me an opportunity to correct it if I'm wrong. But I think in FY21, though we had budgeted 0% real estate growth, we ended up seeing between 7% and 8%, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. And so then when we had kind of another similar growth year the following year, you know, it did add up, but you see a big jump, I think, in 22 when we account for that 8% real growth as well as projected growth for the next year.
Okay. So the other question I have, you know, this presentation started off pretty gloom with the state of affairs and where we are and how we rank and what's the risk factors that involve. And if I heard you correctly, the primary thing that you mentioned as to what's causing our risks, making our risk greater than others is due to being the capital city and the lack of taxation on certain state properties. Historically, have we done anything? Have we ever put this issue into JLOC or some other means of publicizing the real values and loss of values? So that we can have a documented report on where we are and the additional costs to the city and the impact. And that would strengthen our argument to be able to go to the General Assembly and have a factual report to put before them to try to adjust this.
So I will, we have done much of that analysis that you're speaking to from the city side, and a number of our delegation members put budget amendments in this year requesting that the state either review and or increase the pilot payment to the city. Not too surprisingly, the state is less than lukewarm on right. on tackling that.
Right.
But we can and should continue to push that factor because it is, and I would say it's a double whammy because I do believe it also complicates why the city's LCI makes it look like we are in a stronger fiscal position than Henrico and Chesterfield, even though, you know, the fiscal stress index would show that it, the exact opposite is true.
Madam Chair, I would like to propose that it seems as though the General Assembly does give some more credence to JLOC when JLOC does a study for them for our legislative agenda coming up, that we strongly see if we can work with our legislators now to get this into a JLOC study. Some of our lobbyists that have worked with this General Assembly for some time may advise us to do something a little differently, but let's find out if we can prepare a little bit.
Ms. Holmes, can you add that to your list? Okay. All right. Thank you. Councilwoman Robertson, do you have any other questions? I just had a quick question. On slide, I think it's 22, where it says sources from the general fund. So one of the things that we are looking at is the interest. I think it's $8 million, something like that. And things that we're going to fund out of that interest is the interest included in the projected general fund for the upcoming fiscal year.
It is, and I believe it's projected at 12 million. We'll verify that, but we, I think last year we projected 9 and have found an additional that it's generated more than that, which is part of the second quarter reappropriations paper. I'll touch on here briefly here in a moment. So we're budgeting 12 million. We do expect that that number was going to start coming down as we spend some of the money that is sitting in the city's account for ARPA and otherwise, right? So that has helped with with the rates being what high like they are, that has increased our interest earnings, and with the amount of money that we do have in our accounts, in part due to our larger reserves, as well as the ARPA money being in before it is, you know, expended out. So it's not a revenue that we expect to be sustaining, which is why we've been treating it as one-time revenue, and that's how we were presenting it in the second quarter reappropriation. But we do anticipate still significant interest earnings next year, but we're just going to start to see that step down. And if the Fed reduces the rate, that'll reduce the earnings as well.
Okay, thank you. All right, any other questions or comments? Okay, Dr. Neubel.
Thank you, President Nye. Just a point of clarification, Mr. Saunders, if I understood you correctly, the interest earned for this year is 12 million as opposed to 9?
So we are, let me come back to you on this because
I've gotten
a little sideways here, but I believe that we budgeted 9 in last year's budget and we're seeing an additional 9 actually coming in the fiscal year, which is what is in the proposed appropriation.
Right, but I'm hearing that we're looking at the possibility of 12.
All right, greater clarity. The current fiscal year budget budgeted $3 million, and we're seeing $12 million this fiscal year. Next fiscal year, we're anticipating it to be a total of $15 million. So we've added $12 million on top of the three that's in the base budget. So a total of $15 million in interest earnings for the FY25 budget.
All right, Councilwoman Robertson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to follow up on that conversation. Those are huge differences in projection versus actual. Is there a, we know what we have that we are looking at this, that's bearing, creating the interest that we are benefiting from. Do we have a schedule of any kind of projection as to, you said this is not going to last forever,
yeah,
whatever that means. And this is a significant amount of money. It's a significant amount of money that is from three, projected of three in the budget versus nine, 12.
Mm-hmm.
The economists working with us on helping to do these projections, and that's
yes,
what we're getting.
Yes.
Do we have a schedule?
I'm not sure if schedule is the word I would use, but we can kind of provide some, probably some additional information there. The issue, and part of the issue would be that when we start to expend some of the significant funds that we have in ARPA for things like the community centers, you know, $20 million, when it goes out the door to the contractors, that money is no longer in with the city collecting interest. So the timing around, you know, when those disbursements will take place is somewhat, I would say, you know, variable, as well as I believe in the introduced budget, we were basing it in part on the anticipated economic slowdown, which would have changed interest rates, et cetera. So it was a conservative number for the interest earnings. This budget, I think we're getting closer to what we expect to be a real, or we're more confident in raising that number. But I think last year we were not as confident given the uncertainty around the economy.
So the budget we have before us right now has an additional $15 million in this budget.
An additional 12. So it additional had the $3 million from the base budget of interest earnings carried forward from 24.
Total 15.
We've increased it by an additional 12 in the projection.
Total 15.
Correct.
Million. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's go ahead and move on to the next presentation.
Great. Again, thank you, Madam President, Madam Vice President, members of Council, for the opportunity to provide additional context on the FY 2025 operating budget as presented by Mayor Stoney last week, or on the 27th. Sorry, operating, please, yes. All right, move to the first slide. Last year, when we presented the city's budget, we said we were working to strengthen the city's foundation. This year, we've expanded on that concept as we continue to look forward to the next evolution of our city. This year's budget is customer focused. Throughout this budget, you will see strengthening customer service, investing in the community, and investing in our city employees. I hope most members will agree, or all members will agree, that this has been the most collaborative budget process since we changed the form of government. Looking for head nodding. As the mayor stated in his budget address, we hope that we're setting a new standard for how future councils and administrations can work together. We've heard and listened to all council members on their requests and have incorporated nearly all of them into the proposed budget. Our collaboration was not the only thing that made the FY 2025 budget a little different. In previous years, agencies were requested to submit proposals for enhancements to their operating budgets. We knew that 2025 would be a difficult year in order to fund particularly the new collective bargaining agreements and other city mandates. The challenges for FY 2025 meant that we did not ask city agencies for proposed enhancements to the budget, and in order to meet as many needs and identified council administration priorities as possible, agencies were actually asked to provide efficiency gains or where opportunities for reduction in their budget. With the proposed budget, we are adopting a new perspective in how we view our resources. In the past, we most focused on just the general fund amount, and however, we believe we've been remiss in not looking at the budget as a whole. We're not a small city, and we are continuing to grow. We are a nearly $3 billion corporation, with the general fund making up just over a third of it. As I mentioned, we are not a small city, and we're continuing to grow. Many of our major revenue sources have grown. Overall, general fund revenues have increased by 5.2% over the FY 2024 adopted budget, but it would reduce it to 3.9% when you exclude the transfers. As mentioned in the revenue presentation, the proposed FY 25 budget assumes a 4% growth in real estate values, but does not include any increase in the city's real estate tax rate. Not only are our revenues growing, but our needs across the city are growing as well. As you can see, there is $49.2 million in additional funding programmed for the next fiscal year. Our largest growth in FY 2025 is the investment into our employees. This includes, but is not limited to, general employees being proposed to receive a salary increase of 4%, sworn public safety employees receiving compensation adjustments based on the agreements we made through the collective bargaining process that ensure that the city maintains competitive pay with our counterparts in the region. We're proposing to provide another one-time bonus for our retirees, and we are continuing to lead with the highest minimum and hourly wage for any local employer in the region, and we believe the state as well, at $20 an hour. Our second largest growth is the continued investment we make in our children in Richmond Public Schools. Utilizing the same funding methodology, this budget includes an additional $15.8 million in funding to Richmond Public Schools, which accounts for 32.2% of the $49.2 million general fund growth over last year. And backed by popular demand, we received a lot of positive feedback last year on the dollar breakout of how city tax dollars are spent. So we brought it back again this year. When you're looking at the entire general fund budget, Richmond Public Schools accounts for 24%. Followed by public safety, which includes emergency communications at 20%. These two categories together account for nearly half of all our general fund budget. Of our $1 billion general fund budget, $190 million, or almost 20%, is dedicated to major drivers of healthcare, retirement, and debt service. These expenditures are non-discretionary. They are obligations, and of this 20%, 56% is directly tied to our city obligation to pay our debt service. This budget also includes almost $4.5 million in additional funding for support and social programs. We have $1 million in funding for the Family Crisis Fund, $1 million for the Eviction Diversion Program, $500,000 for the Child Care and Education Trust Fund, $500,000 for the Health Equity Trust Fund, $500,000 for the Richmond Resilience Initiative, $500,000 for right to counsel for evictions, $250,000 for neighborhood climate resiliency grants, and $250,000 to continue the Pathways Program, which was established as a pilot in 2023, serving as another tool to support and provide new RPS graduates the opportunity for success by establishing a lasting career. We continued our philosophy in how we fund schools as we have for the last several years. While needs will always be greater than our resources can bear, establishing a methodology to funding schools takes the guesswork out for RPS and for the city. Once again, this year, we based our funding support on the growth in general fund revenue. On this slide, we compared the growth of the local contribution and state support for Richmond Public Schools since 2016, which is a 10-year look back. As you can see, the city support has outpaced the amount provided by the state. And furthermore, over the last 10 years, our local contribution has increased by over 62%, while the state funding has only increased 21%. This is a clear indication that the division of funding sources is in balance. In Virginia, funding for school support is a cost share between the state and the locality. The state uses the standards of quality model to fund schools. The model uses enrollment, local composite index, sales tax, average daily membership, and several other components to arrive at funding levels. Average daily membership is the K-12 enrollment figure used to distribute state per pupil funding. ADM is the average number of students per day enrolled. Once the state has determined the cost of education, they apply a cost share. Our share is called the required local effort. This is also known as the local contribution or city share, whereas state funding is based on the ADM and required local effort. Again, ADM is basically the number of days a child has been in school over the number of total school days. RPS projected FY25 ADM to be 19,537, which is a reduction of 238 fewer students than the current fiscal year. Over the last 10 years, ADM has declined 10% or 2,100 students, while funding has increased by 50% combined between state and local sources. I mentioned earlier that the state requires a minimum contribution from each locality, which is called the required local effort. The amount is based on the funding formula for the standards of quality, incentive, and lottery-funded programs. For FY 2025, according to the state, the city should contribute $106 million for the standards of quality programs and $58 million for all other programs for a total of $164 million. To put it another way, we provide 124% or twice above our required local effort for SOQ and 44% above total program required local effort. Moving on to other city partners, particularly our partners in public health. As you may know, the city subsidy is provided to the Richmond Ambulance Authority to help cover uninsured and indigent populations who are unable to pay for ambulance transport services and after other billing resources are exhausted. As such, third-party insurance providers, Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement are work to be maximized first. The pandemic placed additional stress for our emergency response providers in ways unimagined before. The world has changed forever, and therefore, we need to assess how our city provides medical response and ensuring efficiency and equity. To address these ever-changing needs of our residents, we have increased Richmond Ambulance Authority's FY25 operational subsidy by $1.7 million for a total of $7.1 million. In addition, the city is also committed to the purchase of vehicles, otherwise referred to as chase cars, to support the ongoing fleet needs of RAA, bringing the total funding for RAA to $7.4 million by adding the $300,000 for debt service on for the cars. For the Richmond Behavioral Health Authority, the proposed FY25 budget includes an increase of nearly $2 million to support RBHA. This increase is tied to the city's mandatory required local match by the Commonwealth. This budget also provides continued funding to the Richmond Behavioral Health Foundation to support their efforts around the Trauma Healing Response Network. This network is a coalition of grassroots, community-based organizations and mental health partners that provide support services to families and communities impacted by gun violence. And lastly, we are continuing our commitment and partnership with the Richmond City Health District. Our CHD provides a comprehensive set of public health programs and services for the city of Richmond. Our CHD's efforts include clinical, field, and community-based efforts in areas of reproductive health, communicable disease control, various categorical public health programs, environmental health, disaster preparedness, and response. In pursuit of enhancing customer service, sometimes the most effective strategy is the simplest, core essentials. That means focusing on the fundamental principles such as attentiveness, responsiveness, and courtesy. Emphasizing clear communication and active listening allows businesses to understand better and address customer needs promptly. A key component of our community interaction is our 311 call center. This budget includes $1 million to support technology and staffing needed to advance and improve service delivery and customer satisfaction. As a customer-facing service, it's important that we answer calls, provide accurate information, and support the community resource that everyone turns to when non-emergency help is needed. Additionally, making services customer-centric is a priority as we continue to self-reflect, to evaluate feedback, and identify areas for enhancement. We must continue efforts to modernize and automate antiquated business practices and technology. We began the implementation of RBA Pay over a year ago. This system will vastly improve our ability to process payments, collect revenue, allow customer account access, and distribute billings in a timely manner. A conversion of this magnitude takes time and is done in phases. We recently implemented the first module, personal property tax, in October 2023, and will continue with other modules over the next year. In support of these shifts in technology upgrades, the FY25 budget includes 35 additional positions that were approved during the year and $2.3 million for the conversion to RBA Pay for the Department of Finance. As we have so often said, we remain committed to addressing the housing crisis. This means helping the unhoused and those who cannot afford housing because of the lack of supply. This year, we are dedicating over $4.2 million of the general fund budget to address homelessness. Most recently, we added 200 new shelter beds, 150 beds run by the Salvation Army, and 50 beds operated by Home Again. Continued investment in the eviction diversion program of $1 million, in addition to $500,000 for preventative eviction services, including legal and mediation aid. We're continuing our investment in Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Last year, we made a significant contribution of $50 million over 5 years, or $10 million a year for affordable housing projects starting in FY2024. We have reaffirmed this commitment, and the proposed FY25 budget includes the second installment of $10 million. Additionally, LISC committed to matching our investment with $50 million of their own, which means we have a total of $100 million over 5 years to address our housing crisis. But these are not the only investments we're making in our housing services. We also included $5 million for the Creighton Court redevelopment project led by RRHA, which will result in 246 affordable housing units. With this funding, we will meet $11.8 million of our $21 million commitment. Also, annually, the city receives funding from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. In FY2025, we are estimated to receive approximately $9.1 million. We've also received Community Developed Brock Grant Fund since 1975 to implement housing and community development programs. We received the Emergency Solutions Grant Fund since 1989 to help meet the needs of our homeless individuals and families. And we received the Home Investment Partnership Funds. We have been receiving them since 1993, which can only be used for housing activities. But we haven't stopped there. In 2022, the General Assembly provided localities the authority to provide performance grants for the construction of affordable housing. Under the city's new program, authorized by the legislation, Developers can receive a grant when they construct and designate a percentage of units at or below 80% of the area median income. For each year following construction, if conditions are met, a grant payment equivalent to the incremental increases in real estate tax liability is provided to the developer. In calendar year 2023, 7 affordable housing performance grant arrangements were approved for the creation of 1,230 affordable multifamily housing units. The estimated grant per year for these 7 agreements is approximately $3.4 million. Over 30 years, that's a total of over $100 million in relief for these affordable housing projects. All of these investments total to a substantial investment in affordable and accessible housing. As interest in our city remains as a top destination to live, to visit, to have a business, this budget continues to support our economic development partners. Our commitment to GRTC maintains an increase to support our legally binding CPI adjustment, as well as continuing support free fare rides with funding from the Central Virginia Transportation Authority. Our investment in tourism, funding for the Richmond Regional Tourism, has increased. First, as in FY23, hotels in our Richmond region set a new collective record for annual occupancy tax revenue. And second, per Ordinance 2023-159, adopted by City Council, which established the Tourism Improvement District, or TID. The TID will use a special benefit assessment rather than general taxes to raise revenue for destination marketing and tourism promotion and cannot be diverted into other government programs. Focusing on the fundamentals of public service means good neighborhood engagement and a robust civic capacity building effort. In the past, we've been fragmented in our approach. We put band-aids on engaging with the community, and we believe we need a more holistic approach. We need to combine resources, focus, and our collective intention to provide the services and engagement our neighborhoods and business community have been asking for. To this end, we are proposing the creation of the Department of Neighborhood and Community Services. By creating the new department, we recognize that strong neighborhoods are the cornerstone of a successful city. This department is being re-engineered from the existing Department of Human Services. It will help build neighborhood self-sufficiency and resilience by providing a more community-minded approach through engaging with residences, businesses, neighborhoods, and civic leagues. Neighborhoods and Community Services will bring disparate offices currently working independently under one umbrella. Neighborhood and Community Services Department will oversee and coordinate efforts in the offices of neighborhood engagement, immigrant and refugee engagement, aging and disability, equity and inclusion, children and family services, and homeless services. Working in a matrix style, this organization is intended to work in collaboration to build a welcoming, accessible, compassionate, and equitable community. Foster sustainable and resilient neighborhoods by helping to develop capacity of community organizations, neighborhood associations, civic leagues, and business associations, as well as serve as a source or a link to city services. It takes a village to make sure our neighborhoods and communities have what they need to become resilient and self-sufficient. And because of this, the FY25 proposed budget includes $500,000 in new investment to fund 5 new positions: the new director, the 3 new neighborhood specialists, and 1 small business liaison, as well as a small amount of operating funds. Additionally, 9.5 existing positions and operating funds were transferred from other departments as part of the existing funding to streamline the operation and bring all the resources under one umbrella. This includes 6.5 positions from the Department of Social Services that were providing homeless services, a position from the Office of Strategic Communications that is serving as a neighborhood specialist, 1 position from the Office of Community Wealth Building, and 1 new position was added during the year to address the policy and procedure needs of neighborhoods and community services.
He just has one more slide in this half deck. Then we'll do questions, and we're taking a recess at 2:00.
Excellent.
So you might have to do the second half after.
Restructuring for maximum efficiency doesn't just have Let's look to the future, but to evaluate the decisions of our past. Looking introspectively over the past few years, we can see that we have put a heavy weight of key responsibilities on our current Department of Public Works. As such, we are proposing to establish a Department of General Services to manage several key functions that, as a growing city, such as our city, requires centralized services for more focused attention to these areas, such as our capital projects, our parking enterprise, our fleet management, and real estate services. The proposed budget includes a total of $500,000 in new funding for a director, administrative support, and operational needs for the new department. As you know, capital projects are an area for opportunity for us to grow. With the addition of this new focus, we're better able to address the challenges of our projects, more accurately estimate project costs, and bring them in on time and on budget. The creation of this department is not only a best practice, but allows us to adopt innovative technologies and prioritize customer needs so the department can enhance the quality and responsiveness of the services provided through its dedicated staff and resources. All right, I will stop there.
Okay, so we're gonna do some questions and then we'll talk about the budget request after we take our recess. Okay. Councilmember Lynch.
Sure. Up the room. This is a lot of really good information. I loved what you did on the RPS budget. I think that if any media are present, they should do a whole article on that. I think the I had two questions from different portions of your presentation. One, for the housing plan, and I hear you say that we have a planned $21 million commitment to RHHA.
I think that is right, over $21 million to RHHA. Yes. So we have an infrastructure, I believe, a commitment to help support the infrastructure and the redevelopment of Creighton, the Armstrong Renaissance.
So
we have funding, I believe, in each, mm-hmm. the current year and the next 2 years of our capital budget.
So is it fair to say we're giving them a sizable chunk of investment for the redevelopment of Creighton Court?
Absolutely.
So is it fair to ask them for some data on how many units out of the 504 that they're replacing that are at 30% in the AMI and below?
I would assume we should be able to have any and all info on the proposed redevelopment.
I think that's a very important question to get a response on before we move forward in voting on any more funding going into RHHA. It is my understanding that the units that have come forward currently do not do even close to a one-for-one replacement of those 504 units. And the vouchers that have been given out have already been, the majority of them have been rejected by HUD because they inappropriately place people in the counties. I think this is a known issue that you all probably are familiar with. But before we allow for RHHA to go forward with any of their redevelopment plans, I think it's warrant of a thorough review. Second question is, for the community ambassadors, I noticed that you reshuffled the human services portfolio, which is very exciting. It makes a lot of sense. I think that's really great progress there. And unfortunately, yes, the city ambassadors or the community ambassadors are getting reshuffled under that. It was our hope that when we originally devised that program that they would come on as full-time employees. My understanding is that has not happened yet. Does this budget contemplate the full-time employment and benefits for those community ambassadors?
Yes, and I believe we're currently going through the process to hire as full-time city employees the ambassadors.
Member Robertson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Saunders, you elaborated on the collaboration that we've experienced in this budget year, and I want to thank you for the time that you have spent with us looking at the budget And I am, I would like to get a little bit better understanding on the reorganization and the new departments that are being established. And you mentioned where revenues were being moved from some departments in order to create these new two new departments, right? And there is some concern as to where some folk are landing. They're not really there. I'm getting feedback that some folk are not really, we're not really certain as to where some of the key departments that we are accustomed to being a part of the organizational chart landing and how we are moving those positions in order to this into this restructuring. And I guess one of the major concerns that I have as it relates to restructuring at this in this year, we are certainly so we will have a new council and we will have a new mayor in January. And these are major moves in restructuring in of government that I need to have some comfort as to whether or not they are already organized with exactly what type of outcomes, expectations that we want to see happen from them. What is the increased cost? How many additional employees are going to be hired? Whether or not there is a reduction in other departments because of these changes. If I could have a more clear tracking system that helped me appreciate where you are moving things from to and what are the efficiencies and the increased expected outcomes that you are anticipating and will promise with the reorganization, that would be extremely helpful. As it relates to making a huge decision to move a lot of these things around. Can we get that?
I believe we certainly can. We can provide some additional context and explanation around the proposed changes and moves. If I could add just a little bit of context to
it. But you can trace them, help us trace the money movements absolutely. From one place to the other.
Absolutely.
And any deficiency or reductions in one department in order to accommodate this or yeah. elimination of other departments, if there are. I'm not suggesting that there are.
Yeah. So if I could just add a little, again, more context here. Currently, under our DCAO for Human Services, Mr. Shazer, and this has been the case since, you know, for the entire time I've been at the city, in addition to having the departments of Justice Services, Social Services, Parks and Rec, Libraries, as direct reports to that DCAO, there's also been these additional offices, such as Immigrant and Refugee Affairs. We added the Office of Children and Families since Mayor Stoney came into office, but aging, equity, and homelessness is another new division because we are consolidating. We have a number of employees in our Department of Social Services who do work with our homeless community every day. And they were always general fund funded positions. They're not part of our cost share with the state. So they were always, you know, city positions, city general fund positions. So those are some of the positions that are coming over to the new Office of Homeless Services. And part of the efficiency we're hoping to gain here is with these number of offices who all have kind of specific areas of, you know, populations and areas of focus that they're working with. A lot of the work that these offices do requires some form or help with community engagement, as well as distributing information to the community. So part of our hope with adding the neighborhood specialists and the community ambassadors is that they would be able to serve all the offices with this sort of engagement and communication of services and support. Instead of having to build engagement teams under each individual office. But again, we can provide more background on the funding shifts as well as the, yes. And new positions, yes.
Okay. Councilmember Trammell.
Lincoln, thank you for this presentation. Thank you for all this information. This is some good information. I just want to say that Station 21 is coming down today. Fire Station number 21, they've already started it early this morning, and those firefighters are so grateful. So thank you, and thanks to the police chief and to the mayor for working together and for keeping your promise, because that station is like 81 years old, and finally we're getting that. Also, I want to say thank you and the mayor for putting so much money into recreation parks, because yesterday I was over there at two different parks, and the children, young folks were out there playing. There was other citizens in the Gordon, like on Gordon Avenue at the park, at the playground, and also at 1400 Maury Street at that playground. And the young men let me know about the water fountain not working and about some of the basketball hoops that were missing. And I contacted Chris, and he's working on it this morning. So this is what, when you see the young folks over there using the playground and all of that, that just, that makes you know that, hey, we're spending our money very, very wisely for the youth. Thank you.
Very kind. Thank you.
Dr. Newmill.
Thank you, President Nye. I just wanted to go back to a comment relative to the funding for RRHA. When we do review that, it should be for the entirety of the project over the period that the commitment has been made for. And so I look forward to getting with Mr. Saunders and Ms. Hampton. It is not just a component. This is multi-year. We're maybe in the second phase. We're not even in the last phase in terms of placement. And so to be responsive to the questions as well as to the overall project development would be helpful for, I think, for everyone.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you, Vice President Lambert.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Saunders, for this presentation. I don't know about my colleagues, but I'm a little uncomfortable with some of these new departments that you guys are bringing on. Kind of reiterating what my colleague said about, we have a new administration coming in. Hearing a lot of things with the employees, I just think that we're moving a little too fast. We're duplicating a lot of services. The whole human services portfolio, I have a lot of questions. It's just Department of General Services. I really just don't think we need that right now, especially with new administration coming in. A lot of things that you all have started, you know, there were one-time programs. Children's services, I feel like that's a duplication of social services. They all do the same thing, but we have a lot of heaviness on the leadership side. So I'm just looking at taxpayers' money and how we're actually spending, and a lot of positions that you all have in this budget book have not been filled. We funded a lot of positions last year, have not been filled. So I'm just a little uneasy on some of these requests that you all have. So I'll just yield my time. I just want to make that statement because we have a lot to talk about. And as I look at a lot of the requests that I and my colleagues have put in, I still don't see funding some of these asks or not funded. So when you talk about the Civic Association position that I asked for, you know, I wasn't asking for a whole department. I'm asking for someone in our city's departments that can help answer questions for our citizens that contact our office, to kind of give some relief to our liaisons who actually do the work, talking to our citizens, making sure they're connected to the source, the services that we offer, or at least being a person to be on the phone. We have call centers that folks are on hold for hours. April Bingham came and talked to us about the capacity we don't have to deal with all the calls. So I just am kind of just want us to pause for a minute on a lot of these positions that you all and new departments you all want to create. It just doesn't seem feasible. So I just wanted to make that statement. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I will just say, I mean, I'm a little surprised given the request that was one of your submissions around folks who can work with our civic associations. I will say, looking back in time at the city, there's been very limited dedicated staff capacity for working with our civic associations and neighborhood, you know, business associations, et cetera. It tends to happen either through, you know, collaboration with council members to work with them and their business associations to address when they have, you know, a myriad of needs. And so, you know, obviously that's given the size of our city, that's more than any one person could be in charge of being able to connect with and support every civic association and business association. So that is where, in part, the neighborhood specialists are proposed to come in and support, you know, have the city, you know, supported at least in quadrants or in another form that makes sense, to actually really help connect. And, you know, I've heard from council members, we don't want council liaisons to be 311 agents. We want to make sure that information is getting into 311 and then that services are being provided in response to requests. As far as the Department of General Services, I would just remind council, the presentation that I believe council received around city debt capacity spoke to some of the very significant and costly upcoming projects that the city is going to have to address, including the courthouse, which is currently estimated at over $300 million. And having additional support, expertise, and coordination, particularly within our capital projects, with our parking enterprises, with how we are managing fleet acquisitions, et cetera, I think will be nothing but beneficial and can lead to actual cost savings for the city into the future.
All right, I have Councilmember Jordan, Addison, and Robertson, and we really do need to recess. So I'm gonna start with Councilmember Jordan, then we're gonna recess, then we'll come back and take more questions before we start the next section. I would like to say the next section of the presentation is about budget requests that council members have been working with administration on. I don't think we need to go through them line by line, but while we're recessing, if folks can just look over what's in the presentation, and then if y'all have any questions, comments, et cetera, then we can talk about it as opposed to, you know, just reading an Excel spreadsheet.
And I would just ask council members to review not just your own requests, but all requests, because when we, if we do get a chance to talk about the second quarter reappropriation, one of the themes or one of the things I want to come across is that many of the proposed investments are addressing one request or another that's come through the budget process.
Okay, great. So real quick, council member Jordan.
Yes, thank you. Just kind of a piggyback on my colleague's question about DGS. I think it'd be helpful to see how you're restructuring these top tier divisions, because my understanding was that some folks are retiring or leaving, and this is sort of a way to augment both the talents of Mr. D'Amico as well as some needs within administration. And personally, I'm very interested to see the cost savings we can gain by having our own project managers for CIP versus continuing to contract out. And I think when we do that, particularly now that we've put so much effort into supporting our employees, making sure they want to stay, I think we'll get better service for all of these projects because we'll have more, you know, historic knowledge versus you know, when we do consultants, they come and go much more frequently. So I'm actually excited about the DGS possibility, but I think it would help all of us to see a little bit more how it integrates into the larger org chart. Thanks. Great.
Okay. Councilmember Addison, we will pick up with you when we get back. Okay. All right. We're going to recess until 2:30. And I think there some food? There's food back there. Please come back right at 2:30. I'd appreciate it.
Into the large.
Council members, if you could take your seats, we're going to reconvene. Okay, Mr. Saunders, we are going to pick up where we left off in your presentation. And after Councilmember Addison had a question, so we're going to start with that. Then we are going to go to the rest of the presentation. And you also have a presentation on compensation that we're going to defer to another budget session. Okay, Councilmember Addison.
Thank you, Council President. So I regrettably was not able to attend the first part of your presentation. The second part of your outline of what we're looking to do in new funding for our upcoming budget. And so a couple questions I had was, I understand that the General Services Office is going to be charged with many functions of what used to be an operating office of general services about a decade plus ago. And so bringing it back is, I think, a valuable aspect. However, I'm curious about what potential cost savings or the opportunities for consolidation and what that timeline for that to be able to impact our budget would be, given reviewing your first part of the outline of the budget from your presentation that I missed and reading through what those talking points were. You know, we're sitting as one of the biggest publicly owned percentage of property, and just knowing that of that property, we are probably not best managing those assets. And so just curious, if this is to be a decision that we support from council, I'd like to understand what we could expect in terms of potential cost savings or abilities of consolidation that could be impacting our future budgets, because that's technically what I think the purpose of this is to be. And so I want to make sure I understood what we could be exploring in regards to our lease payments or our transitioning land that's now no longer needed for a parking lot or other asset that's being put back into the tax rolls for development, because those are both key outcomes of what could happen through this evaluation. And so because I missed that, I wanted to make sure I understood a little bit more of what that might look like, because land, publicly owned land, publicly owned buildings that are not being used for their full purpose could be opportunities for consolidation on multiple fronts. And even if it does include new construction, if it means getting rid of five spread out leases or five spread out different buildings into one centralized office, it could actually make better sense economically. Just wanted to curious what your answer was to that.
Thank you, Council Member, for the question. You'll note that around the graph here, beside real estate, the objective for this department would be to generate revenue as well as support economic development opportunities from the disposal of city-owned surplus property. I do believe that part of our initial work plan for this department would be a comprehensive assessment of the city's real estate assets, mm-hmm. along with recommendations for their best use, whether it be for soliciting offers for purchase, whether it's for a redevelopment with, you know, something more along the lines of what we're doing, the City Center and Diamond District, where we're looking for community benefits alongside a purchase. I really do strongly believe that with some additional strategy, we will be able to move faster with leveraging the property that the city has for its best use and best revenue generation. I believe so. So often said, well, around efficiency, sometimes you have to spend some mm-hmm. to eventually realize the savings. So with this establishment, with doing the analysis around city-owned property and real estate, looking at the needs for capital projects, evaluating PPEA or public-private partnerships in whether it's a PPEA format or otherwise, looking at consolidating the city's footprint as far as how many built, you know, we look downtown here and we talk about the courthouse need, you know, there's five city blocks that the city is essentially controlling and using when, you know, in an ideal world, you would consolidate that down to one or two, right? And so I would firmly expect it would take 6 months to a year of work, or at least, you know, from this budget adoption to the next proposed budget before we would really start to see the potential for efficiency savings. Councilmember Durden mentioned the potential to bring some more project management in-house instead of subbing it out to a contractor, usually at a premium. All of those are items that we would be looking for a eventual director of DGS to be making recommendations on within the first, I think, 6 to 9 months.
Good to know. Thank you for that. And then my other question is more around with the presentation I was not able to be here for, but since I have the microphone, I'll take a liberty to ask. Henrico increased their BPOL threshold from $500,000 to $1 million last month. And I know that last year we were fortunate enough to raise it from $100,000 to $250,000. Is there any ability to explore what that would look like for up to $500,000 for BPOL amount threshold for small businesses? Because that was a big, I think, impact on many of us, our small businesses. As we look to revitalize some of these vacant storefronts and areas of opportunity, these types of opportunities help.
I would say we've always had the opportunity to review. I don't believe we've run any analysis of what the, you know, impact of revenues would be of that change. And just to be clear, make sure I heard you correctly, you're talking about going from 250 to 500. Mm-hmm. So we could do that analysis.
Yeah.
Okay. We can certainly do the analysis. We don't have it.
That's
currently.
Fine. I didn't expect you to have it. Just wanted to make that comment.
Perfect.
As I look through that. Thank you.
Vice President Lambert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Saunders, as I'm looking over these budget requests for my district, I have the Gilpin Community Garden. It has NA, but I was told it was a $40,000 request that we... I thought we were on invention. Okay. No worries. Go ahead.
Sorry. I just want to make sure on this first half of the presentation, not getting into the amendments yet, is there any more questions about anything that Mr. Saunders has presented?
I do have a question about that.
All right.
I'm sorry. A little ahead of myself. Just excited. It's budget season. Mr. Saunders, I had a question about the 311 RVA pay, that slide. You said that we are paying for modules and we'll be paying for modules over the course of the year. Just explain to me and also the taxpayers, because when I had a tour of the finance department, I was told that we had to pay for I guess you call it the software for our finance department. Since we're moving to RVA pay, we still had to pay for an upgrade of an old system that we're still using.
Correct.
In addition to the new system that we're going to. So I just want, if you can explain how much are we paying for that old system still in regards to this new system that we're taking on. We put what? 21 million, or I'm not sure how many million in regards to DIT and the software, but
I don't think that number sounds in the ballpark of we can pull the kind of total estimated cost for RVA pay for its implementation. The modules, just so I can be clearer about it, speaks to the different tax categories that are moving to RVA pay. So personal property is one module. Business personal property would be a second module, and real estate would be a third. Meals tax, you know, just so on and so forth. So we're doing the modules in phases and, mm-hmm. and moving our different tax systems over to RVA pay. But the munis, I would have to, we can pull the information on how much the munis upgrade is as part of the total IT enhancements. But, you know, look, as we're making this transition, we still have to maintain our existing system so that we can get some better functionality. A lot of the things you've heard us talk about, some of the challenges there.
The reason why I bring that up is that over the weekend, this is one thing that we do, invest in our employees. And I appreciate my employees were saying to us about what other jurisdictions are doing, especially like the state of Maryland. PG County had the worst response rate when it came to their 311 system. And one thing that they did as a locality is actually get DPW, IT, and their 311 system together and collaborated. They didn't hire any new employees. So they worked with what they had. So I'm trying to see how we can save some more money by a lot of these positions that you're introducing or proposing. We need to get straight what we have right now. And right now is a lot of positions that aren't funded, a lot of people who aren't trained that need to be trained. And that's where we need to really invest in our employees and making sure they can uphold and do this system. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I wanted to find out like the funding in regards to this past module. We're paying for an old system that is outdated, but we're moving to a new system, which is RVA pay. So we're spending a lot of money. And so that's why I just want to make sure we're really working together within our departments and our agencies and utilizing who we have now, because morale is low. A lot of employees are wanting to leave. A lot of employees who have been here for years. And so I just want us to kind of come together before we start proposing new positions that haven't been filled yet. It's a real concern. So
I would ask for perhaps with those comments to give a little bit more specificity. And I've asked in the past for you to be able to refer to me some of those individuals so we can talk through issues. Mm-hmm. I had the pleasure this morning of speaking to roughly 50 new hires that are coming onto the city, many of them going to the finance department, some in the assessor's office, go down, police officers go down the list from there. I do think we're building excitement around working for the city of Richmond. Doesn't mean we don't have challenges, and a lot of those challenges are based in the fact that, you know, we are still 600 employees down from where we were at our strongest strength, you know, 15, 16 years ago. With 311, they are answering and fielding calls, but we also are currently still not able to get to a larger percentage of calls than I think is acceptable. So if a quarter of the folks calling are not able, we're not able to answer it, it means we either need more staffing, more people who are there to take the calls, or we need to find other strategies in order to make sure that they are getting a response. No one should be waiting, you know, exorbitant amounts of time to get an answer or to ask a question. And so, you know, that is the volume of calls we can take is going to be directly proportional to the number of staff we have taking the calls. And so if we want to, you know, reduce the number of individuals who are not able, whose call are not answered the first time they call us, we need to make some of these improvements. So that means adding staffing. It may mean even spreading staffing out over more hours so that there's times that people can call that are not in the normal 8 to 5 period. That is currently the only hours that 311 is open, Monday through Friday. Maybe need to look at weekends. We need to look at callback features, right? So if individuals don't want to just stay on hold, that they can put their name in and et cetera. But that's a technology. That is a system improvement that needs to be made. And again, you know, it takes investment to make those system enhancements, as well as hire the additional staffing. I mean, our 311 agents, I believe, are very well trained, and no one hits the call room floor without going through extensive training. It takes us considerable amount of time to train a new 311 agent. But I would say that, you know, for the customers they're able to serve, they serve them well.
Well, I just made that point just because we're moving towards collective bargaining, but we are contracting out a lot of employees. We're doing a lot of temps. A lot of the temps are being paid more than our city employees in certain departments. So we just need to clean up some of these areas and look at how we best serving and utilizing this money. So
I would just again ask for specificity instead of generalizations.
I got you. And we were supposed to have a conversation before this recess, but I can get those specifics for you after this. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Councilwoman Robertson.
Thank you. Just wanted to do a follow-up. One of the last meetings that we had, there was a group of employees that felt like Al moving the agenda on the negotiation with the unions in regards to that group of employees. Can you help me understand what group of employees they are, first of all? Secondly, whether or not what's the status of the negotiation and whether or not there is any provisions in this budget if we have not done the negotiation, and what do you expect that you anticipate outcomes of negotiations to have budget implications?
So as council will recall, five bargaining units were authorized in the collective bargaining ordinance that was adopted previously by city council. Three of those units had certified a representative group, you know, a representative union before the deadline as stated in the ordinance to be able to negotiate for the FY25 budget. So three of the agencies or three of the bargaining units, police, fire, and administrative and technical, did enter negotiations with the city. And I think we are bringing forward the results of those negotiations to council shortly. I'm not sure whether they're being introduced tonight or if they're still, I think they are, Mr. Rury. Collective bargaining ordinances are being introduced tonight. Not tonight. Okay, April 22nd. But we've been working through those. The group that spoke at council a few weeks ago were representatives of the labor and trades unit, which was, you know, in their election, they had a runoff. And so it took more time to get to the selected representative. And, you know, what I committed to them that evening was to start conversations with them soon. I've had one, I would call it informal conversation with the leadership, you know, the employees who are leadership, as well as the representatives from the union. I think I have another conversation set up with them for this week. But we've been clear from the beginning that we would not be able to enter formal negotiations until after we get past budget adoption, just because of the time commitment it takes to do those negotiations and the significant overlap with our budget, finance, and HR teams who are critical to the budget and those negotiations. So I'm hope that they, you know, understand that we're looking forward to getting it at the table as soon as we're able to wrap up the FY25 budget. The one positive is that the benefits or the terms that we agreed to for the administration and tech unit, the 4% general wage increase, as well as the additional funding for class and compensation, will apply to all general employees, including members of the labor and trades unit, as well as the fifth unit that is more recently come online. As far as the budget impacts, any negotiations would apply to the next fiscal year's budget. So it would be a negotiation around FY26. But we would not know today what the anticipated costs are.
Based on the current negotiations with the three that we have, and also the results of the negotiation by Richmond Public Schools, what do we know what that dollar amount is, and whether or not do we have a breakdown as to that cost based on wages versus benefits? And I assume those are the major categories.
If we have it, it would be what was reflected in the superintendent's presentation from last week. But we can go back and review and see if, make sure.
For our three, as well as Richmond Public Schools, is what I'm asking.
For our three, as well as Richmond Public Schools.
Right.
Yes. We, I believe, can share the, you know, what we, for the salary, the benefit, as well as there's other costs of implementing the agreements that are, you know, having to go into either administration, but, you know, department budgets or otherwise.
So what?
But I will need to pull it for you and get it to you.
I'm looking for a clear explanation of what's the impact of us.
I would say, I mean, if I can roll it up, the impact to salary and benefits was I believe north of $20 million from the three agreements in what we introduced in this budget. And that's not including some of the other things like some of the other employee benefits that have been expanded, like the home buyer program or the health clinics or anything related to retirement. That would be strictly in the compensation and benefits side. Yes, just keeping in mind that the third one, the general employee group, administrative and tech, we applied that same, the negotiated wage increase to the entire workforce, general employee workforce, non-sworn.
And Councilwoman Robertson, CAO Saunders is going to be back in front of us at a later date to do a whole presentation on the compensation. That's the third presentation that we have in front of us that we're not going to have time to go into today. Okay. I have two other council members that have questions. Councilmember Trammell.
Yeah, thank you. Lincoln, I just want to say that, you know, our population has grown since 1998. A lot of, you know, issues in certain districts. And also, I just want to say that, you know, us as council members, we can come to you and ask you for help. And I know that you reach out to us and you help all of us, even when we're not always on the same page. Just want to say that before we start, and I love my colleagues, love her to death, before we start considering what we should tell you to do, we need to start looking at our own department and see how our some of our employees are upset and to see how some of us council members are very upset about what's going on that you have nothing to do with. And I know that you can't tell us what to do on the third floor, can't tell our chief of staff, you can't tell her people that she's hired. So I don't think it's fair for us to sit here and try to criticize you or the administration for what you are trying to put forth to try to help us. And yeah, we all know 311 is not working. We've talked about that since 1998, about how people can get through. We know that we have some issues with finance, and you just told us that you're hiring more people. We know that we have some issues with the police department because we don't have enough police officers, because this day and time, people do not want to be a police officer for different reasons. So I think that we have to give our employees a little thank you to say, hey, we appreciate you, because I know that we've got collective bargaining coming. We've given them raises and things like that. But sometimes a little thank you for our police officers, our firefighters, the Richmond Ambulance Authority, and your employees. Little thank you goes a long way. Instead of us sitting here trying to criticize you and tell you this is not working, we need to say this is how it's going to work if we work together. But thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Neubel.
Thank you, President Nye. Mr. Saunders, and this is just for future, with DGS, I think it might be helpful to have a sense of the inventory of capital projects that the person will have responsibility for. I can think of one in my district that has so many moving parts over multi that it would, you know, and so that might be helpful. And then the other part for me, does it also include RPS projects? Just a question. I'm not requesting that it's just clarification. And I think one of my other colleagues mentioned the cost savings of having someone in-house versus having to have somebody come on as a consultant every time and what that means or dollar-wise. So
we can certainly provide that. And obviously, the capital budget, when we go through it, we'll point to a lot of the projects that would fall under it. But if it were speaking of the one I was thinking of, but something like the Shaco project is exactly the kind of project with multiple moving pieces, significant coordination between public works, public utilities, partners such as the foundation and Shaco project. We just have a lot to move forward there, and it's going to require a lot of support. And our capital projects team has always been kind of a small but mighty team as we've been working to, you know, address city facility and city capital project needs. But it is one of the things that has led us to, you know, the smaller size of the team to rely on consultants and other outside support rather than building that capacity. But also your question. But at this time, we do not anticipate being responsible for RPS capital projects unless policies change.
Okay. We're just having a slight side conversation about the eclipse. Do you folks want to go outside for the next 10 minutes and check it out or carry on with the meeting? Council members? Okay. Okay. All right. We're gonna carry on.
Okay.
So next we're gonna get into the amendments, and I had asked if, well, CEO Saunders, why don't I let you open up and then, but let's not just go through them line by line. Instead, council members have looked at them. They've had an opportunity to look at everybody's, not just theirs, and. I know you all have done a lot of work in trying to fund them, some in this budget, some in the current budget, and other places. So if you want to kick us off there.
I will, and I will try to go quickly through the operating budget requests. All right, so within these, the only one that we would say has not been funded in the budget is the e-bike rebate program, and that was because that the enabling legislation at the General Assembly was not adopted this year. And so that one kind of took itself out by the legal barriers there. We do also believe that we have addressed this second set of lists, including bike racks, civic association positions. The Gilpin Community Garden is one that look forward to a few additional conversations. It's already managed by Parks and Rec in the city, and I think we can work to meet the improvements that are requested collaboratively with Parks and Rec.
Yeah, Parks and Rec had, we had discussions about that. So I just want to see it reflected. Otherwise, I don't have to put in a budget amendment. Thank you.
I would.
Thank you.
Not to get into it now, but on something like this with a fairly... a smaller financial commitment. I think we can do it within existing operating as opposed to a line item, but we can talk about it. A number of council members requested that we expand the Park Ranger program. So we do have funding for three additional Park Rangers. Really excited to see them be able to support not just our James River Park system, but also our other community parks where there's need to make sure that there's good support and compliance with the city's rules. Housing Resource Center, Family Crisis Funding, and alleys are all addressed in the budget. The requests around additional tax freezing is something that we are looking at and regarding our seniors and disabled tax relief and whether there's room for further expansion. We are also currently implementing several changes that we have already made to our senior tax relief program that we're kind of looking to see how that impacts, like the rolling application process, the elimination of the barrier for those who have a current delinquency for enrolling, et cetera. So look forward to additional conversations about how we can work to provide relief, particularly for our aging in place seniors. Funding for eviction diversion is in there as well. I believe that we are currently working with the attorney's office to find out the legality around what we can do to support accessory dwelling units regarding affordable housing. We do have funding for the Health Equity Trust Fund, the Child Care and Education Trust Fund as requested, and we have proposed a one-time bonus of $300 per retiree for fiscal year 25. Funding for cemetery operations is captured in the budget, and I do believe that includes the additional cemetery in Forest Hill that has, you know, been brought up as well. And I do believe that our funding of the ambulance authority is sufficient to meet their operating needs for the coming year as we continue to see how things evolve with the way call take and dispatch is managed, a lot of some collaboration happening between DEC, RAA, and administration. The funding for DIT enhancements addresses the request for additional software for the Commonwealth's attorney. The community center staffing is also included in Parks and Rec's proposed budget. Again, some of these other items related to public works can be addressed within operating budgets, and as well as, you know, we do have funding in undesignated of $378,000 for council amendments for council offices or otherwise. Next.
So hold on one second. All right. So any council members want to comment, ask questions, anything about your amendments? That I know there's been previous discussions behind closed doors. Any comments? All right, we're going to head into the reappropriation paper, which y'all talked about in finance, but we're bringing it back here because a lot of the budget requests were funded through this paper. So the CAO is going to get us into that.
Yep.
Ms. Holmes.
Thank you, President Nye. I just wanted to make a quick comment. We're using requests, priorities, and amendments as one nomenclature. What you submitted were your priorities to be included in the mayor's budget. And then they were addressed as though they were requests. They're your priorities of what you wanted to see in the mayor's proposed budget. The amendments are what you will do following this if you see that certain things were not included. So I just wanted to say that. Additionally, we also sent you all the opportunity to be able to submit those amendments as soon as possible if you have them because of the compressed time schedule. So I just wanted to announce that as well.
Okay. All right. Vice President Lambert.
Just one particular question, Mr. Saunders. I was told that we had a disparities study and it has not been funded. It's for $2 million. Talk offline, but I just wanted to talk about that study, that if that's not funded, we definitely want to look at that being funded. So we can talk offline, but I just didn't see that in here. It wasn't originally a part of it, but in discussions with our budget staff, just talking to see, make sure where is that $2 million? If it is $2 million to fund a disparity study, if so not,
the disparity studies was funded in prior budgets and is currently in process.
Okay.
And so I'm not familiar with the $2 million need to fund a disparity study.
Well, I believe this is for the recommendations from the disparity study that we need to fund, and just wanted to get clarification on it. Are we moving forward with that? If not, where is that money? I thought that was supposed to be utilized. So as I said, we can talk offline, but that's just something that I want us to just have an answer for. So make sure that's
okay. We can follow.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. If you could proceed, please.
All right, I'll try to move quickly through this. Just briefly, this language is kind of just a reminder of the charter language that speaks to how we handle changes in revenue and appropriations during the fiscal year. In this case, the additional revenue, as was discussed earlier, is from interest income, so earnings on money we have in our accounts. It's estimated to be $9 million higher than budgeted. It's due to us having a larger average cash balance, and as well as our short-term interest rates being higher than anticipated when the FY 2024 budget was developed. This additional interest income is one-time revenue, and we would ask to consider the spending on it the way that we should with one-time revenue. The budget amendments that have been proposed by the mayor are necessary to, you know, again, tie one-time revenue to one-time expenditures, continue current levels of service, pay for services that are currently being provided, address council member requests, you know, through the budget process as well as, you know, during the fiscal year, and relieve some of that stress and pressure of funding items within the FY25 budget. We're getting into the list of proposed appropriations. We have some additional funding for the office of $150,000 for the Office of the City Attorney to address salary increases from prior staff. And we are now, you know, confident that the FY25 budget adequately and accurately captures those incremental costs for 25, but we do need to supplement the City Attorney's office budget for the current fiscal year. For the second item, many of you may recall that as part of the ARPA spend plan, and I'll speak more to this later, there was a proposal to use $3 million for a community development financial institution fund, a CDFI fund to do revolving loans to support small businesses. We ran into a bit of a legal issue with the CDFI being with ARPA funds, that because it was a revolving loan, it would, you know, it would potentially run afoul of the rules about ARPA spending being completed by a certain date. So what we are proposing is to take $1.5 million of the current one-time funds to support a CDFI program, which would then also, again, free up the ARPA dollars that we need to have obligated and, you know, otherwise be tied up prior to the end of this year with our ARPA deadline. So that is what's proposed. The 1.5 would go to the Department of Economic Development, I think specifically to the EDA, to enter into an agreement with the with a CDFI and set the program parameters. The original request of within the ARPA spend plan came from Councilmember Addison, and his request, I believe, this budget year was that we would find a way with general fund dollars to support the establishment of this program. The Office of the Registrar has requested additional funding in order to improve ADA compliance for elections. This is a mandated improvement, and the cost for making these changes is $646,000. We've had some additional costs in the current fiscal year for the inclement weather shelter, and so we'd like to provide additional funding of $200,000 to make whole the human services budget, because they took on those additional costs for inclement weather, for the inclement weather shelter in this fiscal year, as we've been operating under our first contract year with Salvation Army and Home Again.
All right. Mr. Saunders, what can you just elaborate on that $200,000? What costs are we paying for? Because this is first I'm hearing of this $200,000 for the shelter, since it's in the third district. So what is the $200,000?
This was additional security costs that were not anticipated when we first established it. But I think, as you would speak to, we realized we needed to enhance the security for the site, both for the safety of the using the site, as well as, you know, for ensuring the impacts to the community are mitigated.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And we do have the FY25 budget does consider and fund the security that is needed for the ongoing operations.
There's a lot of more expenses that are being revealed in regards to that shelter. So we'll talk more about that later, but just want to put that out there.
Okay. Thank you. Next up, made a request this fiscal year regarding an opportunity they had based on some changes in RPS's schedule to expand their after school programming. So this funding would enable them and support them, having made some of those expansions possible during the fiscal year. But I think we've addressed it as well in the FY25 budget for any ongoing need for support. I believe a few council members have brought to the city a request to support the Down Home Festival of the Alegba Folklore Society with an additional contribution. So that $10,000 request is reflected in this appropriation. We also have had requests for funding and support for, I believe, studies and additional work with housing opportunities made equal around fair housing. Councilmember Robertson, I believe, advanced that request. We did also receive this year during our budget consideration process a request from the from J. Sergeant Reynolds, from Dr. Pando, to support an advanced pharmaceutical manufacturing industry, I think for workforce and job training. It supports the recent designation as the Regional Technology and Innovation Hub. And I believe we have representatives of JSARG here if anybody has more specific questions about that proposal. Given the request, and it's possible to advance our work around the City Center Innovation District, as well as our partnerships, again, in the region around workforce and technology, we wanted to recommend to do this partnership with J. Sergeant Reynolds, and this was the we felt that this was the appropriate time to fund it instead of including it as a general fund obligation in the 25 budget. We have also, from the administration, recommended additional funding for the procurement department to support some of the work with additional technical writers for contract management and system upgrades. That's budgeted at $50,000. $3 million represents the single largest proposed allocation that we would like to make, and that is for to support the demolition of the Coliseum. Today, the structure poses what we would consider to be fairly significant risks from a liability and security standpoint. Keeping the building secure in the if we do not move forward with advancing the demolition of the Coliseum, we will likely have to offset that with additional security costs to maintain the integrity of the fencing, etc., that is intended to keep folks from getting inside and causing challenges. Doing this would also, I think, help with advancing and or enabling the City Center project to move forward at a faster pace without adding that cost and challenge to the CDA or the other costs that we need to move forward to advance the City Center. Public Works, I believe, has been sharing with the security costs with Human Services related to the Coliseum in the current fiscal year, as well as the homeless, the shelters on Chamberlain and at Home Again. So we would like to restore $1 million that they have been paying out of their budget to support the security in this period as well. The second to last request is a proposal to is a desire to do a study of the hybrid residential and commercial parking permit programs and the other on off street parking use. I think this is largely related to the city eliminating the parking minimums in the past year and wanting to make sure that we have an appropriate study and understanding of what those impacts will be and what the city needs to do to be set up for success after that decision has been made to reduce to eliminate the parking minimums.
Vice President Lambert has a quick question.
Mr. Saunders, for that parking hybrid study, is that for the whole city or is that just for the second district?
Whole
okay.
City.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Newbell.
Were you completed? I'm sorry.
I have one more item and then I'll...
Well, it pertains to an item in here. So
okay.
So with going back to Mr. Addison's item, it appears to me that we now have $1.5 million in ARPA funds that can be allocated to other priorities.
And I will speak to that in just a couple moments.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
She wants to be first.
Okay. All right. I think I had one more item, which was the, I think it's $988,000 that's proposed to be supplementing parks funding for improvements to playgrounds, community centers, and parks across the city. What I would like to do at a future meeting is kind of present a kind of a more holistic presentation of what Parks is proposing to do with the additional funding, because it shows up here, the ARPA reallocation and in the general fund. And so, you know, you have to piece it all together to see the full picture of what we're proposing we can accomplish for our community parks and recreation centers over the next year.
Okay. All right.
Take questions,
CAO Saunders plow through. He only has two more slides, and then we'll do questions. Okay. Great.
Great. I think to just summarize and not belabor anything, the second quarter appropriations paper is meant to balance the needs of the city within the current fiscal year, addressing some department, you know, increased costs that were not anticipated when the 24 budget was developed, as well as trying to get a number of council budget amendment requests addressed, particularly if they are one-time funding requests, with this one-time funding, and so that we're not trying to squeeze them into a comparatively tight 25 fiscal year budget. And now I have, can I just run through the ARPA one? Okay, all right. So the two sources for the reallocation are the $3 million from the CDFI revolving loan fund, which again ran into a barrier with the ARPA rules and whether this could be an allowable expenditure. And appreciate the Councilmember Addison working with administration on how we can pivot to other funds. And then we have an additional $374,000 left over from an account we set up for one-time bonuses after at the end of the pandemic. So we've distributed all the bonuses that we committed to. We had, you know, marginal amount of funds left over, so we wanted to add it to the reallocation. We're proposing to use almost $2.2 million of this additional funding for further park and playground improvements across the city, proposing $680,000 for supporting the solar fund so that we can provide solar paneling at our capital projects of TB Smith and the First Police Precinct, and then $500,000 to match the general fund $500,000 for the Child Care and Education Trust Fund in partnership with Thrive Birth to Five. So with that, wanted to present that picture of, you know, when you look at the combined city operating budget, the second quarter reappropriation, and the proposed reallocation of ARPA, how we are trying to align that with addressing more of the council requests. I think that I would expect council has more questions around, particularly in the parks and rec, how those combined investments will be utilized, and would like to bring that to you at a future time.
Okay. Thank you for that. I just want to point out two things to council members. One, the clerk has sent around a request for a special meeting on May 8th at 3 p.m. If you could check your email and respond to that or talk to her, she'll be in chambers in a half hour. And the second thing is Ms. Holmes has sent around the details on how to submit an amendment. I think the due date is later this month. Is it the 29th? However, if you know you want to put in an amendment, please just go ahead and do that, because the sooner we get it, the better. As you know, staff has to work on it, and it's a piece of legislation, all of those things. So the sooner the better on that. And the last thing I'm going to say, and then we'll do questions for a couple minutes, is if you know, we've had three budget work sessions at this point. If you are feeling like, hey, I really want to know about this one thing, and you have not talked to the CAO about it or Ms. Holmes, please circle, let us know today so that we can make sure that is in the schedule
we're trying to really hone in on things that council members want to hear about. And Ms. Holmes does have a list. And if you look in the budget schedule, you can see some of these things broken out. But if there's any other highlights out there, please let us know. All right. Ms. Trammell, you have a question?
Yeah. Lincoln, I got an email and some pictures earlier. It's in reference to, because you brought up about the new TV Smith Community Center. And it's going, I mean, I took pictures the other day. It's looking really, really good. But they want to know about the address 2001 Ruffin Road. It was an early head starting school. It's been closed up since 2019. And they want to know, does that building belong to the school or to the city? Because I know the mayor was looking at it. It's a round building on the property. And it, like I said, they said, well, the notice says it's been closed since 2019.
I will.
It was a Head Start program.
I will research that and get back to you.
You'll get back. Yes. All right, thank you.
Hey, Dr. Neville.
Thank you, President Nye. Mr. Saunders, it seems like I still should have $1.5 million. I'm looking at, and maybe I just misunderstood, the CDFI revolving loan fund I thought was $1.5 million, correct?
That is the new funding proposed in the second quarter reappropriation.
Okay, but what you have here is $3
million. So, and again, I will thank Councilmember Addison for working with us to make it a number we thought we could meet in at the current time. So it is a lower number, the $1.5 million, than what was originally proposed with ARPA spending. So we do have the $1.5 million. So if you look at these reallocations and uses, the three uses on the bottom add up to the same total that we're reallocating from both the $3 million in CDFI funds and the $374 in bonus funds. And so the 2.1, the 680, and the 500.
Good.
You're good?
Yes.
Sorry.
Looking for 1.5 additional to allocate. So I'll keep looking, though.
I know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Neville, I tried to claim it, too, so it's okay. During our discussion, I was like, ooh.
Councilmember Addison, you have a question?
I was just going to say that this is a, I met with Floyd Miller with the Metropolitan Business League several times, but now that we have moved forward with the potential of being in the budget, there's a lot of excitement because there is a gap we can meet for a lot of our minority business entrepreneurs that can help get them from kind of what they call the Kiva startup friends and family aspect of funding to get to the place where more traditional banks can lend. And because this is now identifying specifically for a subset of our population, directly knowing that there are barriers to access through networks and other pieces, you know, this is a big step to creating a loan fund that I think we can not only provide a need for probably 50 or more businesses, but more importantly, once started and payments start coming back in, it only grows. And so for me, this is potentially a more formal expectation of supporting our food cart vendors becoming food trucks, becoming then restaurants, which I think is a big part of our culture as a city. And I think that helps support people from all backgrounds, all cultures and races and ethnicities to succeed in our city. And so this is something I'm excited to be added to what they call their capital stack. And so happy to answer any questions as this proceeds. But this is a big opportunity for us to really help a lot of people that don't typically get access to funds like this. And so we're meeting a big need, especially post the pandemic, which identified a lot of those gaps financially for a lot of people. So looking forward to seeing how this works together. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Robertson.
Thank you. One question, Mrs. Saunders. In regards to the funding for the small businesses, minority businesses, how are we administering that?
This is through the CDFI. Essentially, we would work with the EDA to set the program parameters of what we want to see the CDFI support. And then we would enter into an agreement with a partner that is capable of doing that work. And then they would be the ones administering the programs, working with the businesses, providing the loans, et cetera. We would get to set the parameters, but then we would get a, have an agreement with a provider to provide the services, similar to, you know, how we operate things like, how we operate many programs where we're not the direct administrator. We're not going to be having the revolving loan grants go straight from the city to the small business. We would partner with somebody with experience and expertise and capacity in this space to administer the program.
So would that be tied to enterprise zones or care zones as a part of that initiative, or?
I think that we have the ability to structure it the way that we want it. I do believe Councilmember Addison has provided some framework details for how the program could work that could be shared with council members. But again, this was something that originally was funded a couple years ago in the ARPA spend plan and is now, you know, we're evolving so that we can meet the objective given the limitations we had with ARPA spending. But whether it's tied to enterprise zones or that, I think the idea, as Councilmember Addison said, is to help businesses go from that startup to that next phase, but do it before, be able to intervene before they're probably in a position to get a more traditional financing or bank loan.
Okay. All right. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about the WICM. And also, we've got a significant amount of investment that has been made in partnership with the Richmond Redevelopment Housing Authority in Hillside that has a gap in finalizing that development over there. So I'll get with you and share with what that is as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Vice President Lambert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Saunders, I see you're spending $3 million to get rid of the Coliseum, to demolish it. Why aren't we using bonds to do that?
This is cash.
But
it's one-time cash, one-time money.
One-time cash?
Correct, not bonds.
And then, so another, I guess it just would be helpful if you can split this up so that we can see, you know, you got security for $1 million and then related to the homeless shelter. Can you split up the amount of money that DPW was paying for security so that way I can just see that number? It's just a little confusing. It's like, if we're going to demolish the Coliseum, why are we paying for security?
I think that's for the current period, because it will take us time. I mean, it has had additional security costs in the fiscal year. But let us come back with some additional information on that specifically. Okay. But if this amendment is, this appropriations paper is approved, we're going to still have to go through an RFP. We're going to have to go through a public, you know, procurement process before we're ready to move forward with demolition. It's not, you know, it won't be overnight. And we are hoping to, you know, keep the costs as low as possible, but it is a significant project to remove the cost.
And would that be something that you should wait for the next administration instead of putting this $3 million in here? Because you're talking about cash. To me, it just seems like we could be using that money for something else.
It is certainly in council's purview to approve or deny. However, I would say that we do have risk. We have liability risk from a city risk management perspective with the Coliseum being in its current state, its dilapidated state. It's certainly an eyesore downtown. It is a cost that will likely have to be borne either by the city or through the establishment of the city center project. It will be an anticipated cost because we're hoping to see redevelopment on that site. And again, if anything were to happen, a fire, somebody getting in there, losing their life for whatever reason, we are concerned about the liability to the city. And so we're trying to mitigate that by, just as we would with other abandoned boarded up properties in the city, they are the risk of liability. That's why we work hard to eliminate them.
Okay.
Councilmember Robertson, did you have something else, or was your mic still on?
Just a comment in regards to the $3 million with the Coliseum. How long has the Coliseum been vacant?
Yeah, that sounds right. Either early 17 or 18.
Okay. And when we look at the level of the attempt to continually put something in downtown, as far as a development deal, I certainly hope that we can get an update on where we are with the central development plan and, you know, taking this one-time funding for the removal of a really big elephant in downtown. We're having a lot of issues with blighted properties. Broad Street is in pretty bad shape, and monies is needed to help us clean up not only in the 6th, but the 2nd District as well. And I would hate for us to miss another opportunity for some extreme economic and muchly needed economic development in our downtown core and address some of the challenges that we still face in the 6th District downtown. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do any other council members have questions? Okay. I'm just going to say one comment about the Coliseum. Councilmember Robertson and I were at the Venture Richmond meeting a couple weeks ago and did a tour of Broad Street downtown. And I mean, I agree. I think it needs to be demolished. I think it'll help kickstart things downtown, and I'm definitely worried about the liability, and I wish we had addressed this a couple years ago, but we are where we are, and we do have the funding to take care of it, so I would like to see us move forward in that.
Did you say? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry.
I said I think we should demolish the Coliseum. That's the summary.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We are going to close this meeting out. Thank you, everyone. And we will reconvene here at 4 o'clock for informal. We have docket review, which should be